Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, in studio today with Frank Holloman of the Southern Environmental Law Center. And joining us by phone today, Jeff Brooks, spokesman for Duke Energy. We're talking about coal ash management in the state. If you have a question, you have about 15 minutes to get that phone call in. We'd like to hear from you. The number is 910-343-1138. You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us using coastlinehqr. And we do have an email. The writer says, I have read it will cost $10 billion and 30 years to clean up this problem. How does Duke Energy plan to pay for it? Will it try to pass the cost on to its customers? That's a question for you, Jeff Brooks.
Okay. And it's a great question. And it's one of the challenges, I think, that we're faced with the current legislation that's being proposed. In our engineering studies, as we've estimated what it would take to move that material, we have seen that our largest plant, as far as what we have coal ash deposits, could take up to 30 years. Dan River, for example, being among our smallest plants, would take about 2 years or so to excavate, and then reality is somewhere in between for the other sites. So up to 30 years to remove all of that material. And the $10 billion number that the viewer or listener mentioned relates to kind of an all-in plan of if we did sort of a hybrid if we excavated all the material at all of our sites, take it to a line, landfill, or other application, and then went to dry ash handling at all of our new sites. Now, a lot of those sites do have dry fly ash handling, but we would have to convert to dry bottom ash as well at all those. So that sort of all-in proposal would cost about $10 billion. And one of the challenges of the legislation that we're facing with is it sets a deadline of 15 years to remove all the material. And we see those timelines as incredibly aggressive, and they're going to create significant challenges for us to be able to comply with that requirement as we think about just the sheer logistics of picking this material up, moving it, and then the lack of clarity so that we're looking for right now on how our basins will be prioritized. We've named some ourselves. Those are also in the legislation as high priority sites. But as we think about the other sites and how they'll be prioritized, you know, we want to get clarity as soon as possible on kind of how those will be evaluated. What will be the ways that you'll determine if it's an intermediate site or a low priority site? Because there are timelines and closure options attached to that are very important as we think about how we'll be able to comply with this law. Now, to the question of cost, those are things that will be ultimately worked out by the Utilities Commission, which is our regulator here in the state. And as we think about coal ash basins, they are part of the normal operation of a coal plant. They are constructed as part of that operation. They operate with the plant, and in our decommissioning plans for the plant, the basins are part of that. So it'll be up to the commission to determine how those costs are handled, but we do see them as being part of the operation of the site, and that will factor into some of those discussions.
We have a caller, Heather from Hampstead. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. Heather?
Yes. Jeff mentioned in passing that they can excavate the ash from a site where it's being held at the moment and then line that same site and put the stuff back in it. They could probably cap it with some kind of a dome to stop water getting back in it. And I don't see it as an either-or proposal because the stuff is still there. If they needed to take it out and use it for concrete or whatever else they want to use it for, they can still do it.
Heather, thanks for your comment. Jeff Brooks?
Well, and I think, Heather, you make a great comment that there are really some excellent potentials that could be explored for how this material could be used. I think one of the things that you know, we think about is we know some technologies that are currently available to reuse this material, but there are others that are coming to market or that are in development that 2 to 3 years from now may be, you know, excellent options that we haven't even explored. We're taking a look at all those options now and making sure that we have a means of either storing it in some way that could be left on the site, however that would be, and or having the time to be able to evaluate these technologies would give us a greater array of options to choose from as we think about what we can do with this. There's a lot of benefits that coal ash can provide, and as we think about this material, wouldn't it be great if we could come up with a solution that provides some positives to the economy and to the community as we deal with this?
Frank Holloman.
I just want to emphasize that the communities in Clean Water, North Carolina, can't wait any longer while Duke takes a look at things or speculates, wouldn't it be great if we could do X, Y, or Z? They've been storing this ash irresponsibly and dangerously for decades. The danger was very clear in 2008 when we had a catastrophe at Kingston. The exact same kind of storage Duke was doing. They've had 5 or 6 years since that catastrophe to figure this out and did nothing.
And Kingston, you're referring to the Tennessee...
TVA catastrophe
yes.
In Tennessee with 1 billion gallons of coal ash hit a river coming out of a earthen pit, much like Duke's containers. The timeline, as Jeff says, that Duke has been talking about 30 years, that's really... Even they connect that only to one plant. There's no reason they can't clean up almost all the plants in North Carolina within a 10-year time frame, and there's no reason they couldn't have gotten started 2 or 3 years ago. We can't sit and wait while Duke takes a look at things. Our rivers are being polluted today. The Dan River community was devastated while Duke was taking a look, and we need Duke to begin taking action, as is happening in South Carolina today.
We have a tweet from Brady. Brady says, with faulty reporting in the past, can we trust Duke Energy to give honest answers regarding the Dan River spill? Do your coal ash ponds leak from numerous seeps? If so, how can Duke allow this with a clean conscience? Jeff Brooks?
Well, you know, certainly the Dan River incident has been something that we have taken very seriously, and as part of that, we've conducted an extensive review and an engineering study of all of our basins across the fleet and all of our sites to look for anything that at a high level, look for anything that needs to be worked on, looked at, examined, and we're going to have those results soon, and we're going to update the state once we have those, and we hope that will just further move along our process of being able to take action on these sites. Now, what we would say, though, in the meantime is we've complied with our permits. We've worked to meet those, and where we've identified an exceedance or something that needed to be addressed, we've done that. And with Dan River, you know, we have worked very closely with the communities along the river to ensure that they have adequate information. We've posted our sampling data and our survey data on our website. Everyone can see it there. I'm pleased to say that the surveys that the EPA has performed most recently are indicating that most of the river is really not showing indications of any deposits of coal ash there, or if they are, they're very, very small. We've not seen impacts to drinking water there. Tourism is doing well down at the other end at Carr Lake. We saw a report just the other day. Drinking water is safe for agriculture and animal use. So you know, we've worked to try to provide information as best as we can to the community to help them address their concerns. As we look at our other sites, you know, we're taking action where we need to address this, and we have a rigorous inspection process at all of our sites that looks at those dams. You know, Frank mentioned the event in Tennessee or in Kingston. You know, this was the Dan River event was a fraction of what happened there. That was a complete dam failure there. This was a stormwater pipe. So while they're both unfortunate, they're very different scenarios. But what it did do is drive a lot of updates in the way these dams are inspected and the way these processes are done. And not to mention, the one last thing I'll mention is the retirement of half of our fleet and moving away from coal, it's going to play a role of only about 25% in our generation mix. That in and of itself provides a solution for a lot of the future coal ash that would otherwise be stored in these basins. It's going into dry lined landfills now. We're moving to cleaner natural gas. So, you know, we've made a lot of progress. Is it as fast as everybody would like? You know, maybe not, but we're doing everything we can to be responsible here, and we're going to do it right.
Frank Holloman.
I'd just like to say I think the listener's absolutely right. You should be very skeptical of anything a spokesperson for Duke Energy says. Duke Energy said before, and Jeff just said then, they comply with all their permits. And earlier they said all laws and regulations. Well, there's a federal criminal grand jury looking into their activity. The state of North Carolina says they're violating their permits. State or federal clean water laws, or all three, at every place where they operate in North Carolina with coal ash. Then they told us every site they had was safe and well managed, much what Jeff is saying today. Then we had the Dan River spill. Then they told us this much talked about stormwater pipe was made of reinforced concrete. That was wrong. It was made of corrugated metal. What we have seen from Duke is on every major issue related to their coal ash management and storage, what they have told the public of North Carolina has proved not to be true.
Are we talking about, in some cases, semantics? Because I think there have been concerns raised over the proposed Senate bill to manage coal ash that certain discharges that are now considered illegal would simply become permitted discharges. That's one of the concerns?
Yes. In fact, right after we filed our first notice, Duke's lobbyists met with Diener in private, and they came up with the idea that they had these illegal discharges. Because these sites are so primitive, they can't stop illegally polluting and leaking. They're just engineeringly incapable of doing that. So they tried to get Diener, the state agency, to, in effect, give them amnesty, give them a piece of paper that says what is now illegal pollution, we will make legal. And believe it or not, even though that settlement was rejected by the public, Diener itself had to pull it back after the federal criminal grand jury began investigating it. That very proposal has made its way into the Senate bill and now in the House bill.
Jeff Brooks?
Well, you know, I think a couple things. First of all, I think that there are semantics being thrown out there, and there are certain things in the rhetoric that are being said. And I think what I would want to say is if you don't want to listen to a spokesperson, that's fine. But I'm speaking for people who I've spent months in the trenches with at Dan River and at our sites. These are people who have worked, these are environmentalists who have worked 30 plus years of their career at these sites. They live in these communities. They drink the water from these communities. Their kids play soccer with other people in these communities. They love these places. And I have seen them just, you know, really impacted emotionally and personally just by some of the things that have been said by some of these groups. And I'm not saying that to take away a responsibility, but I want you to understand that these are real people who very, very much care about the water quality and the safety of these sites, and they have invested their life into that. Now, that having been said, with the legislation, it does seek to address these seeps that do put very, very small amounts of water that sometimes reaches these waters. What I can say is that if these were an issue, they would be under the permits. They are part of the permit there at the site. They are evaluated. They are looked at. We've reported them. So these are things that we are working through to address. There's work that can be done, certainly, but we're working on them. And this legislation will take that even further.
We have just a few minutes left in the show, and there's one more local issue that I want to get to. The Sutton Steam Plant, Sutton Lake, the pollution of that is part of the SELC's legal action. And, Jeff, can you explain quickly how Duke asserts that Sutton Lake is part of the coal-fired operations? You're saying it's part of the operations of the plant.
That's right. Sutton Lake was constructed as a cooling pond for the Sutton plant to cool water that comes out from that process and then ultimately returns it in a closed-loop system back to the plant. So it is part of the function and the design of the unit. Now, if you could see underneath the water, there's a series of partitions in the cooling pond there that allows the water to take a very circuitous route. Now, when water gets to that cooling pond, that water has gone through a series of three basins where that water has moved down from a primary basin to a polishing pond where material settles out, and then by the time it reaches a clean pond at the end, the material has settled out of the bottom. It's then discharged through a permit to that cooling pond where it then follows this eight-stage process throughout there. It is part of the system of the plant. But having said that, it's provided a benefit to the community. The fish has the lake has a thriving fishery there, one of the best fisheries for largemouth bass in the southeast.
And
fishing,
Jeff,
tournaments that, there. That
issue right there is actually one of the points of contention here, because there was a professor from Wake Forest University, Frank Holloman, who did a study asserting that there are some serious fish population issues.
In fact, here's the issue that's being dodged here. Duke has not used this lake just as a cooling pond. They've used it as a wastewater lagoon to dump their coal ash pollution into. As a result, this lake has been heavily polluted with selenium, and a fish study done by the leading expert on selenium impact on fish at Wake Forest University this year determined that over 1 million fish per year are being killed in that lake due to this pollution. Many of them deformed. The bass fishery itself is sick, as Diener has said before, because of this pollution, and periodically has had great dips in its population. The U.S. District Court in Wilmington just recently ruled that, in fact, this lake is not a wastewater lagoon. It is part of the public waters, and that Duke cannot legally dump into this lake its coal ash pollution without proper permitting.
And, Jeff, you have said that the levels of selenium, okay, we're going out in just a moment, but the levels of selenium meet state regulations. However, there aren't any levels for human health at this point.
That's right. They are within state water quality standards, and we've never found the findings that Dr. Limley has found in his studies over decades of looking. We've actually asked Dr. Limley to share that information so we can see what he's doing, and over 6 months he's not done that yet. So, you know, we have some skepticism about his findings. We'd like to see it, but ask the local fishermen if you want to know the truth for what's going on there. They see a thriving population. They love this area, and if there were an issue, we would address it, but we're not seeing the reports that we've heard, and that kind of goes to that question of, you know, Frank mentioned it, you know, question what you hear, make sure you challenge what you hear, and you know, understand what the facts are behind that, because the science is what needs to drive the story. The story doesn't need to drive the science.
That's all the time we have. That's this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank our guests, Jeff Brooks, spokesman for Duke Energy, and Frank Holloman, senior attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Join us next week. We're talking about gang violence. After all the community conversations, what have we learned and how are we responding? That's next week, Wednesday, July 9th at 2 p.m. here on WHQR 91.3 FM. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Our producer is Ken Campbell. Associate producers are Bob Workman and Lindsay McGrath. Our technical coordinators are George Scheibner and Lan Nichols. Our music editor is Bob Workman. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of our listeners and our guests, and not necessarily of WHQR Public Radio or our licensee, Friends of Public Radio Incorporated. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.